EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
Howdy, dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. Tonight's guest is Johnny from Pennsylvania in the US, sharing a number of his abduction experiences that started back in 1963 and continued throughout his life. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Thank you, Nick.
It is wonderful to have you on today. Calling from Pennsylvania?
Yes.
That's great. Now, Johnny, you're going to be sharing your alien abduction experiences over the years, going back to the 1960s. Would you be kind enough to start at the very beginning for us, please, sir?
Sure. The event that triggered my memory of 1963 is really what started it. In 1963, my first event was, I was about 15 at that time, that I remember. There may have been things before, and I really am hard-pressed to remember them, period. But in 1963, I was, I think, in the fall, and I was sleeping, and there are 6 of us in our family, and my 2 youngest brothers were 2 and 3, and they were in their beds, and my brother and I slept in a double bunk bed, and he was up top and I was on the bottom, and I saw these lights, and they were multicolored lights. So there was a strong green light to the effect. And I thought, well, what is that? What is it? I got out of bed and I went to the window and I pulled the curtain back, and here I'm staring in the face of an alien, and it had a green cast to it, though he wasn't green, because of the lights. And there were hedges or bushes outside, which of course are green, but the light gave him a hue of green, and there were bright lights. And then I don't remember much. And the next thing I do remember, and I have to make clear that as I grew older, I remembered the little bits and pieces here and there when I thought about it. So that has accumulated over the years. But as I was walking down the hall back to my bedroom, I'm asking myself, what am I doing out here in the hallway? Why am I walking back into the house and down this hallway? Well, I go to my bedroom and I lay down, and I lay there for a little bit. I don't know why. And then I get up and I go over and talk to my mother, And my father worked odd shifts, so he wouldn't appreciate if I woke him up. And so I went over to my mother, and I told her, woke her, and told her, you know, what had happened. And she said, oh, no, you had a bad dream. I said, no, Mom, no, Mom, something happened here. I said, I don't understand it. And I explained it to her. And the reason I remember it was 1963 is because I'm insisting to her that we have to call President Kennedy and let him know that they are here, that this is going on. There are these entities that are coming into our houses and doing things. And, you know, she just puts me off and puts me off. And I go back to my room and eventually I go to sleep and I start the next day. But as a 15-year-old, there's no one to turn to. This was a period of time when this was not widely known. I don't even know if anybody knew about it back then. There was no support. There was nothing to read. There was nothing anywhere. So, you know, it's very perplexing. Well, now I'll jump to 1982. Okay, I've got my career and I'm teaching in Ohio. This is in Hammondsville, Ohio. And it's 1982. It's April 31st, going to May 1st. Sleeping in bed with my now ex-wife, and I hear this noise. And I have my son, who I think he would have been about 3 years old at the time. He was in his crib at the base of the bed. And we had lived in this big old farmhouse. 1835 it was built, what Hammondsville is named after. The Hammonds owned it. And all the windows are old, and you don't open them because it's very hard to get them in open and closed. And the one window, I think I might have had open a little bit on the one side next to my wife. And anyhow, I hear this noise, and I'm thinking, you know, I hear dogs barking, and every once in a while I hear a yelp. And the next thing you know, it starts getting closer and closer, and I hear dogs that are closer and closer yelping and barking. And I'm thinking, well, that's some deer. You know, they're chasing the deer and the deer are kicking them and that's causing them to yelp, you know, something like that. Then this noise gets louder and it gets closer to the house. I'm still laying in bed, you know, because I'm like, you know, well, what is that? You know, and I'm thinking, oh, it's a coal truck coming down the hill because we live very close to the road, you know, a good, I'd say, 1,000 feet from the road. And I'm thinking, well, okay, maybe it's an airplane. Maybe it's a helicopter. I'm going through the gamut of all the noises that I can think of. And this noise keeps getting closer and louder. Finally, I sense this thing is right overhead, over the building. And there's this deep, deep sound. Boom. And it's going. You could feel the energy. The sound was creating waves in the air. And all of a sudden, that pauses. And then there's this intense scan-like. I could feel it sweeping over my body. It was moving up and down over my body. I could feel that. And of course, by now I'm thinking, no, this isn't no airplane, no truck, no, you know, all that's gone. And then the intensity becomes even greater. And I feel it move through my body into the mattress. And I can feel the springs in the mattress are like vibrating. And I feel and I sense that it's penetrated completely through the floor down into the basement. Again, this is a like three-story building. It's an old farmhouse. And in the basement, there's coal. So I would always leave the door open for fear of fires, et cetera, and smoke. You know, I would smell it and wake up and get everybody out of the house. That was like one of the fears that my wife and then had with the child. So I always would leave the door cracked open a little bit. And when this intensity went so high, it hurt my ears so bad. It was like somebody took a knife and stuck it in my ear. That's how bad it hurt. the intensity just went right through the roof. And now I knew why the dogs were barking, because it definitely had to have hurt their hearing. Definitely, you know, they can hear better than us, I think. And then after the intensity went like that, it shut off. And I laid there and I anticipated something. In my mind, I was anticipating something. And I looked at the door and I saw a hand come around the door. Now, this is the part that really drives me crazy. This is the last conscious thing I remember. I said to myself, here they come again. Not what the hell is that? Who is that? Who's at my door? Here they come again. That's what went through my mind. So then the next thing consciously that I remember is that my wife is asking me, and I'm laying there. She goes, what was that? And we see the lights, the bedroom. There were two bedroom windows that faced the road far away and the football field where the school was. That's how close we were. And I said, I don't know what that was. You know, I say to her, she goes back to sleep. I can't go to sleep, but I can't move. Then eventually I can move, and I'm like going through the house trying to see what was shattered or disturbed or some evidence that this occurred, that something occurred. And I, of course, I cannot find anything. The chandelier wasn't swinging, nothing like that. And I'm angry. I feel like I have been violated. I feel like I've been, you know, I don't know what a woman feels like when she goes through a rape, but that's thing that entered my mind, the concept. And I'm very angry. And I have this internal struggle, and it goes on for years. It just doesn't end that day, of wanting to tell someone. But part of me is telling me I'm not supposed to tell anyone anything. And so the next day, I finally eventually go to sleep. And the next day, I'm totally exhausted, totally wore out. But I go ahead and I go on to teach, and I ask my students, without letting them know anything, if anybody heard anything. And of course, some of them said they, you know, saw lights, and that they heard some dogs barking and noises. And the one girl up the street said that she saw lights. And there were supposedly in the paper something about UFO sightings. And but I had to tell somebody. So I told one of the science teachers who worked there with me. And of course, he just looked at me very oddly, but I felt compelled to tell somebody so I could document the fact that this actually happened on that date at that time. And I told him, you won't understand this, I said, but I feel compelled to tell at least someone. And that's what I did at that 1982 incident. A number of years I went by and built a new house, and we had moved away, and we were living at a different place. And my wife she didn't remember anything, but she started working for US Air. And anyhow, they had nights like where they would get together. And that one event was they had a hypnotist there. And she teased me that I should get hypnotized someday and find out about, you know, what had happened, because I had read a little bit on it. And I had eventually even wrote to Bud Hopkins and a few other people. And of course, they all referred me to local people. So after that event that we went to, I got to thinking maybe I should do that. And I did. And I met up with a man and in Pennsylvania. And he put me under hypnosis. Now, at the time, I thought, oh, I can't be hypnotized. You know, I'm one of those people that probably can't be hypnotized. And, you know, it's all a bunch of malarkey, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, being very skeptical about the whole thing. And when I went in there, it took him a long time to get me to the point where I would open up. And later through the event, I realize why now. Eventually, he gets me to start to talk about that night. And I do talk about that night. And what happens is after they come in the room, they take me out of the room and they take me up stairs through the roof, and I'm on like this carrier. I don't know how to explain it. It's like a transport bed of some kind. And it's not a bed. It's much more fragile. But I go up. We literally go through the roof, and we go up into the sky to the UFO. And I'm in and out of consciousness during this time. I black out at times, apparently. I don't know why, but maybe it's just too overwhelming. Maybe I'm screaming. I don't know. Anyhow, we get to the vehicle, and the entrance, and this is really odd. There's something about this, that when we get to go into the vehicle, it's real odd. It's real awkward. They have to like manipulate me to get me into this vehicle. And I really don't understand that a whole lot. But when we're in there, and eventually I'm taken and put on a table, and they do their, I don't know what you want to call it, investigation of me to see, you know, what has changed or what is going on. And they look at my eyes, they look at my arms, they look at my legs. It's really scary. Okay. And so again, I'm in and out of consciousness during this. Eventually, I leave this vehicle, and the same scenario, I'm manipulated in this entrance area again to get out. And I don't understand that. If they can take us through the roof, farmhouse, why do they have to manipulate me? But it's being done as I leave. And then I'm looking out, and it's a black sky, stars, you know, and it's like 500,000 feet in the air. And I see myself coming down to the ground. I'm being taken down to the ground. And all of a sudden, I'm standing in front of this alien. And here's where it sort of fits together. And he's taller. And he's looking me in the face, in the eyes. And I know him. I know I've seen him before. And he's giving me hypnotic suggestions, is the only way I can describe this, telling me things that I'm going to do for the rest of my life. In other words, he is setting the stage for what I'm supposed to do. And he is putting the suggestion at the core of who I am. I respond, and I remember this, going, oh, 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 oh. In other words, he went down to the deepest part of my consciousness and left these powerful suggestions there. That's what I experienced. And then the next thing you know, I'm in my bed. Okay, apparently I blocked out again. I'm in my bed, and I'm looking, but I can't move. And they take my son, who was 3 years old at the time, out of his crib. They take him away. And I am crying because I am helpless. I cannot do anything. I can't do anything to help him. And under hypnosis in his office, I'm crying. Tears are running down my face. When the session is over, I have tears all over my face. And of course, you know, it's very disturbing. And they eventually bring him back. And the next scene shifts where the vehicle moves away. I can see the lights spinning and flashing. And they're multicolored lights at this point. And they're moving away. And my wife wakes up enough. She doesn't move. But she asks me, what was that? What was that? And I tell her, I don't know. I don't know what that was. Consciously now, we're both conscious. She goes to sleep. I can't go to sleep. I just couldn't do that at that point. So that's the gist of what happened in those two events. Later on, my son, he has experiences when we at the new house where we moved, and then I go through a nasty divorce with my wife in 1991, 1992. I end up with Custy, my son, in Ohio, which is unheard of. Anyhow, to make a long story short, we progress to today, and I don't know how I should tell this, Nick, but through the years, things have filtered up and come to me. And of course, I'm not telling you every detail about what happened, but I have these feelings and senses about what happened. Going back as a child, I remember seeing in my mind, seeing the earth from afar. I remember seeing these screens that I was shown by the aliens that had like three red marks, flashing like red marks on the globe. The Middle East, South America, it's alarming. It's alarming. It's like warnings for us. It's like an education center, so to speak. I have visions of people hanging on the walls inside the vehicle like we're meat. We're stuck there on the walls. And the people were crying and screaming. And there's nothing I can say or do to help them because I've been through this. I knew what to expect. But these people who were with me on that vehicle, they did not know. That was their first time, maybe. So there are little snapshots that have come percolated through the years. And I also think that when I lived in Ohio, that there was not a one-time event, that there was another interaction, and it was of a sexual nature with an alien and the collection of sperm and enticement that happened one night. These events are not dreamlike, and they happen at night. Then we'll fast forward to 2020. I'm living back in Pennsylvania now. I'm teaching back in Pennsylvania, and I've taught here for over 17 years, and then I'm retired. And here I start to speak out at a local UFO conference, and I spoke like three times to very small groups of people about what I experienced. And then one night, it happened in March of 2020 here, I had this occurrence where I wake up and I'm just frozen with fear, just frozen with fear. And I have to go get my wife out of the next room because she was sleeping in another room that night. And I went, my current wife, and I went to tell her, you know, come back to the room with me, that I'm so upset. I told her, I said, I'm scared as hell. And I had just, my body was all, I was shaking. I was so frightened, so scared, so worked up. And I had like goosebumps all over my body. And I told her that I had this feeling like I was in this vehicle and I was moving, taken somewhere, and the light inside the vehicle was so bright. It was like daylight, beyond daylight. And I'm in there with these other people, and we're in a room. There's only one entrance. It's like a circular room. There's only one entrance that you can come in and out. And it's almost like a feeling of, like you're going to go to your local coffee shop or someplace like that. You know, you're going to sit down with these people and you're going to talk to them. And these are other participants. And we're in there. And as we're flying, I sensed that part of this, whatever this was, moved off in another direction. And I'm like, okay, that's good. I'm glad to see them gone. And part of this entity goes away. But we're still in this vehicle. And then the next thing you know, that I'm returned to Earth. I'm returned back where I was taken. When I get up the next day, there are these three circles on the ground. And this also occurred in the 90s at my mom's house, mom and dad's house. There were three circles there too. And I took a picture of that. And I have one picture with my dad standing there, and there's a circle behind him. and it's not fungus or mold or whatever. I even took a, because I was in physics and computer science and mathematics and earth and space science, I took a Geiger counter to it, and I, you know, there was no gut, there was no radiation. I never did take a magnet to it, or, you know, a compass or anything like that, which I should have done. But that's the other part, is like, you don't know what, you don't know what you're doing. You're, and you don't know enough to investigate it, like, logically, when you're part of the, the part of the event that has happened. It's just so overwhelming. And that leads, of course, me into warning other people about this, is that people often say, oh, you know, I'd get them to talk and tell me where they're from and what makes their engines work. I would like to know that, of course. But you don't have that luxury. You're frightened out of your mind. You don't know what is going to go down or what's going to happen. They are in complete control. There is no locks, no security system on this earth that would work to keep them out. And the other part is, I have this feeling like they can come in and out of space-time, that there's something we don't understand or we don't have a grasp on, that they can interrupt space-time somehow, some fashion, because it isn't like a flow of time. It's really, really odd. And again, you know, there's so much more to it, but these things really did happen, and I actually have pictures of the circles on the ground out the back window of my house. And, you know, I have spoken to a small local group, but I thought by opening this up that I would get the message out. As I'm getting older now, I'm going to be 73 here soon, and I want people to know this actually happened. And I do think it runs in the family.
Join me, George Norrie, for the Worldwide Contact in the Desert Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to June 28th. Contact in the Desert is an epic weekend of adventure, jam-packed with exciting explorations into UFOs, ancient civilizations, AI, crop circles, forbidden archaeology, disclosure, and the newest evidence of ongoing contact, sightings, and leading-edge science. This amazing weekend delivers more than 130 presentations and special events showcasing 67 speakers from all over the world, with 2 extra weeks to view your favorite leading experts, including Avi Loeb with Clyde Lewis, Linda Moulton Howe, Paul Hellyer, John Lear, Russell Targ, David Childress, Doc Wallach, and more. With breaking articles in the New York Times and acknowledged naval sightings, and more importantly, the new release of classified documents on the day of the soft opening of Contact in the Desert, we are your source for inside information. Join us June 25th at contactinthedesert.com to get your tickets today. Make contact, contactinthedesert.com.
Let's go back to the beings. Are you able to describe them to us?
The one that I saw through the window was definitely what you would recall today, as they refer to it, as a gray. And it was not real tall, because my window, I could... And I'm 15 now, you know, I try to remember, smaller at that time. I could look out my window, and he was not even with me, but maybe a little bit tinier. Now, I'm 6'2 today, and I probably had a good bit of height back at 15. Most of my family members are tall. My grandfather was 6'4. So I wouldn't say we were eye to eye, but we were pretty close. And that is the most disturbing part, is because I realized what I was seeing, and then I lost it. In other words, I was taken over by looking into his eyes, into those big almond eyes, like, and that's the occurrence. Most of the time, they're like beside you, behind you, around you, or if they do have you on a table, there's these lights in your face or instruments in your face, and you can't see them as well. And I also wore glasses. That affected things too. Now, up close, I could see things even without my glasses. But far away, it would be much more difficult to image things, you know? And you also have this sense that they're there, that they're around you. That, you know, is very heavy. But as far as seeing others, I don't know whether to interject this or not, but later on, after the 1982 event, we were going to go up for Easter time to see my parents. And my wife, my ex-wife, and my son, she was getting him ready. And I was outside, and I got to pull the car out and had it sitting there out of the, like, there's a lean-to, you know, it wasn't a real garage. And I pulled the car out, and I had it ready. And I was just killing some time, and I went over to the railing and where the it was a road that ran down to the main road. It was a stone road, and because it's a farm. And alongside this split fence railing was this old, shallow gully, like it ran up behind where the barn and all that used to be into the back field. And I look over there, and I see what we would call Bigfoot today, only it wasn't. They're not as, it didn't, they didn't appear as massive as the ones that they depict out west. They were a little more thinner, but there was about five or six of them. And they were like strategically placed. There were two up on the one side of the gully, and there were like two on this side and one in the front. And then there was a larger adult male and a female carrying a smaller one in her arms. Now, I walked up, I was standing at the rail real quiet, and they're walking on this leaf-trodden gully region, and they're below me. And I'm looking down at them, and then he looks up at me, and all of a sudden, I turn around and walk away. And now, to this day, I do not understand that. Why would I just walk away? But that's what happened. And I do remember seeing it. And it is unbelievable in my mind that I saw that. And the only other correlation that I have with that is one time we used to work in the field out back, and my wife and I, we would grow pumpkins and various vegetables and that, because we were school teachers, and I was a school teacher and didn't make a whole lot of money. And we were trying to grow some crops in that, along with the people who lived there that shared the other part of the farmhouse with us. And we left our son up in the field, and we came down to the house. And neither one of us could explain why we did that. That was really odd. And by the time we realized that neither one of us had brought my son back down, it had been 20 minutes or more. And we were like aghast. And we were just, you know, we hurried up and ran up into the garden to get him. And, but it was like, you know, we were really good parents. We were, in fact, you know, we were like always looking out for him and, you know, making sure that everything. And for something like that to happen, it was like way out normal too. We couldn't explain it, neither one of us. So as far as seeing what they look like. And of course, when I came back down to Earth in 1982, and I was stood in front of that, the alien there, that was a gray, also only very tall one. And that's about the only ones that I've had encounters with that I remember.
It definitely does seem to be a connection, especially with these Bigfoots as well. Bigfoots and lights, UFO sightings. You know, a lot of people just believe that these hominids are just walking around, physical beings walking around the woods and stuff. To a degree, that's probably right, but there's definitely a connection with all this. I mean, it's the same with UFOs. I don't believe that they're all nuts and bolts. There's a science we just simply don't understand about it.
I cannot explain it either, because there's no way. I don't even know if I knew about Bigfoot when that occurred. You know what I'm saying? It was like, that was back in 1982, and I don't know if I ever, even read anything about it. But they were more thinner. They weren't this massive, you know. Of course, they were down lower in the gully, so they could have been bigger, because I never went down in there. I was always afraid of the snakes or something down in there, you know. But they were walking on these leaves right up through there. So, you know, the fallings from the branches and stuff, I cannot explain it.
You know, I've spoken to many people which have had abduction experiences, and also they've encountered Bigfoots and Sasquatches and that. Now, when you saw this gray under aggression, when you recall seeing this Gray in 1982.
Yes.
You said you knew him. So that would obviously implies that you've had dealings with this one beforehand.
Right. There must be multiple. Now, I'm not saying like every week or something, but there must have been multiple events because it hadn't rose to a level of my consciousness at night. In other words, I wasn't awaking consciously before the event occurred. I think that's how they get away with this sometimes. And I also have this feeling like being schooled, like I was shown things and told things. When I was going through that difficult period before I got hypnotized, it bothered me more and more as time went on. And that's why my wife suggested I should do this. And I started keeping a diary. That's what was suggested to me by the regression. And I started writing, you know, like my dreams or whatever that was occurring, I wrote down. Now, in the divorce, I lost the book. They took the book. That's how it goes. But I remember all this stuff, you know, that's the big thing is, like someone said to me, you remember a lot. And I said, yeah, I do. I said, but there's an awful lot I don't remember that subconsciously it's there, but I can't pull it forward. And I know if I went under regression back to when I was younger, there would be a lot there, I think. I vaguely remember like walking to this vehicle that night. I vaguely remember that. That has bubbled up, but I don't remember much more than that.
You know, because there'd be a lot of people out there now listening to this show, and they may have had an experience, but they simply just don't recollect it. You know, that memory is completely hidden from them. You know, they might have had an odd experience and they just thought, oh, that was weird, and then just carried on with their life.
That's right. And then not only that, but even after that event occurred, what research could I do or anybody do? Now, I know today they say, I watched on TV here, they said that they have UV, that the fingerprints and things. That would have been amazing. That would have been, you know, I think that would have been probably showed some things. Because, like I said, the hand came around the door. And I'm not saying, who is that? What is that? Who is that? You know, the neighbors, you know, nothing like that. It's here they come again. If that isn't telling, I don't know what would be. I mean, that's what I keep going back to, because what I remember is what I remember. And it happened. That I'm sure of. And that's why all this aggression brings forth this more information. It happened for sure.
Have you considered rekindling more sessions of regression?
Going back to when I was younger, I think I could handle now, because I'm near the, you know, I'm older now in my life, and I think I can handle that. But at the time, I still had my career. I was only about halfway through my career, and I was leery of, you know, being labeled or whatever at that time. And I think that's another reason why a lot of people don't come forward, is because it's like, did this really happen? You know, and you tell yourself, you know, that it did. But then again, you have this like doubt. And there's this, again, this internal conflict where I think under the hypnotic suggestion from them, I'm not supposed to tell no one. No one. I'm not supposed to say anything. And so the rebel in me is saying, I got to tell. but I couldn't at the time. And now that I'm retired and, you know, those things are not as important, I have to get this out. It is imperative that people know that our lives can be disrupted this way.
They showed you this is what you're going to be doing in life. Was it actually a career path?
No, in fact, I don't remember what he said. That's the parts that he was speaking hypnotically, like to my deepest consciousness. And I'm literally responding with, oh, and it keeps getting deeper. Oh, oh, oh. And while that's occurring, it's not like someone telling you something. It's just suggestive of the thing. And I have this feeling like, you know, that I'm supposed to do these things. And then subconsciously, maybe I've done many of those things. Ever since I was little, I have always been on the scientific or mathematic or physics or chemistry or, you know, I just have been like a sponge on all this stuff. I served in the Navy and they wanted me to, my first day in the Navy, I wanted to join the Air Force, but my eyesight wasn't good enough. I really wanted to fly. And when I couldn't, then I went to the Navy. So I went to the recruiter and the 90-day delay program. And when I went in to have all my tests taken, you know, you take your regular Army test and all that. And then eventually you get into the Navy, you take a Navy test. And I'm in a room with 80 people and I scored the highest. And they call my name and I think, well, how did I screw up? What did I do wrong? You know, and here I scored the highest. They want me to go in the nuclear Navy. And they told me it was for 6 years. And I said, this is my first day. I said, you want me to sign up for 6 years? And I think if some recruiter would have helped me at that time, I probably would have gone that path. But as it turns out, I said, what do you got for four? And I went into radar and electronics. In my high school, they taught electronics and electricity at that time as a very progressive. We had a planetarium and an observatory at our high school. And we, you know, I took the Earth and Space courses. I think maybe there's some connection there. There might be. You know, I can't put my finger on it and tell you exactly, but I know my son is a lot smarter than I am. And he just is amazing. When he was 8 years old, he was doing machine languages on the Commodore 64. I taught computer science. I don't know if you know anything, but teaching your own kid is like the hardest thing you can do. And he was like a sponge and just picked up stuff from whatever, you know, from me, from watching, et cetera. So I think there's something here, how much truth, you know, to the fact that I'm guided or forced in that direction. I don't know. I don't know how to respond to that.
We were talking briefly before the show about generations.
Yeah.
That it usually falls into involving other family members. Now, when you regressed and you visually saw your son then being taken, of course, you know, it's very difficult to see a family member being taken like that. Has your son had other experiences on top of what you recall?
Well, when he was a little older, let's see here. He went to Kent State with me and took the Kent State student program when I was going to Kent State for computer science. And it's just me and him, 90, 91, 92, in that era. So he would have been 12 or 13. He told me that he came to me and told me that these little men came to him in the night. And he didn't have any rest until he made me go in the car. And we drove down to the bottom of the hill and he showed me where they were. And he said they took him into a vehicle. And it bothered him so much until I went down there and did that. And then one other time he told me that he was like late for the school bus. And he started crossing this field and to get to the school bus. And he says, it wasn't normal. Something happened and he was like there immediately. And he said he doesn't remember crossing that field properly. So there have been those occasions. Now he's older now and he's about the same age now that I was when this happened to me in 82. So, you know, I've been leery about, you know, anything that happens. For him, but he hasn't told me anything. I think he would if something happened. I think he would.
You know, it's not uncommon for people to have these experiences, and there'd be massive gaps.
Yeah,
in between the actual occasions, you know.
Well, the ones that you consciously remember for sure. There have been you know, well, in 82, and here it was 2020, and that's, you know, almost 40 years. And why would they still be interested in me? You know, I have no idea about that, you know, but there must be something.
And it's, you know, it is very possible that in between those years, you know, things could have happened, you know, they could have paid you plenty of visits, but again, you just simply just don't recall it.
There's The only other thing that I've had in my life that happened, Nick, is my father died in 2001. And my dad always, my mom and dad always said that he couldn't dream. My dad couldn't dream, that he didn't remember his dreams. Now, I often wondered whether he had experienced something and he just wouldn't, he wouldn't let himself remember. You know what I mean? But he said he never dreamt. And I find that hard, very hard to believe. But, and like I said, I have seen my own father in a vehicle, like hanging on the wall with these, with other people. And of course, he's in agony over being in that vehicle. I see that. And I'm perplexed by that all. But anyhow, in 2001, my father died. He was 76. And the day he died, we had just celebrated his birthday, not just previously. We had a big party for him and that. And anyhow, I was going to go up and see him, and him and mom, who I often did. I kept tabs on them quite a bit. I'm the oldest. And I would go up there and see them and help them and, you know, whatever. I'd take my mom shopping or whatever, get away from dad for a while. And he would always do some work that he couldn't do. I wouldn't come around. So anyhow, make a long story short, I decide I'm not going to go up there that day because my brothers were teasing me that I'm always up there. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe I'm spending too much time with them and I won't go up right away today. And I had to mow my lawn. And I had just given the SAT test at the high school. And so it was around noonish, and when it was done, and I had to make a left to go to see them or a right, mow my lawn. And I decided I'd make a right and mow my lawn. So I come home and I mowing my lawn, and I'm out on the yard and I'm mowing, and I'm on the back and I'm getting close to being done. And I have these pains in my chest, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, am I having a heart attack? Well, I had just recently gone to the hospital to see a teacher who was a physics teacher who had a heart attack while he was on a lawnmower. And so I'm thinking, no, this can't be. This can't be, you know. And I thought, I'm not stressed. This is not normal. And so I stopped the tractor because the pains were so great. I catch my breath after a little bit. And of course, that European ethic comes through again. And I only got a little bit more to mow, and I'm going to finish that. And so I continue mowing. And sure enough, a little bit later, it hits me again. Now I'm really worried because I'm thinking, nah, the first time, well, you know, but this now, the second time, and it stopped me. I still sat on the tractor. I was afraid to move, and it went away. And of course, like I said, this European ethic, there was just a little bit more to do. I talked myself into finishing, and I said, if I finish this, I'm going to go in and sit down. I'm going to get something to drink and go out back and sit down under the trees. So I finish. I go out back. I go sit down under the trees. I get a drink. As I'm going there, after I put the tractor away, my wife pulls in the driveway, and she has a honey to-do list. And I told her, I said, I don't think you understand, but I'm going to go up there and sit down. And I explained it to her again that, you know, I'm not feeling real good, and I'm going to go up back and take it easy. So she accepts that. I go up back and go sit under the trees, and I'm just looking to relax. And it's a sunny, bright day, nice, beautiful day. And all of a sudden, I got this feeling that there's someone behind me. And I'm thinking, oh, that's some of the kids. They had paint guns. They were shooting at each other in the woods. It's a scrubby, brushy woods behind me. And I'm thinking, well, that's probably what it is. So I get up and I look. There's nobody there. So I sit back down again, and I get this feeling again, like somebody's behind me. And I don't see them. I don't hear anything, you know, that would indicate that there was anybody in the woods behind me. But I had this overwhelming feeling that there was something or someone behind me. Then the next thing you know, I'm turned and I'm facing like toward the house, and the sun was in that direction, but not direct. I'm not looking in directly into the sun. And all of a sudden, this glow comes over me. I don't know how to explain it. It was like a euphoria, a golden glow, like. And I'm sitting there, and I'm wondering, what is this? And I had this feeling that there was somebody in front of me, and there were more than one in front of me, that like two people. And then I look over my shoulder, like, and I see all these people. But Nick, it's like looking through time. A really odd feeling. I'm like looking, the further back I see somebody, they're less interested, or they lived long ago. And as they were closer to me, they were more interested and were more recent in time. But there were all these people behind me. In retrospect, those are my ancestors, and I, or friends, or, you know, relatives of some kind. And I turned back, and my dad was saying to me, everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be all right. Everything's going to be work out for you. Everything's going to be unique and wonderful. And I had the sense that his brother was there. Now, his brother died before he did, and he was younger. He had a tragic accident at work, and they were very close. And there was a little more, but basically it fades. But I had this euphoria feeling and energy. Oh my God, tremendous amount of energy. And it gave me this feeling like what we've been told about religion is hogwash, that this is not how it is. This is not how it's going to go down. There is a hereafter. And it's different than we can imagine. And when it was all said and done, and as it faded away, it gradually faded. And then my wife calls to me. You know, I'm still sitting there. And my wife calls to me, and she says, your brother is on the phone. Come down. He wants to talk to you. So at that time, I went down to the house to answer the phone. I didn't have the cell phone or phone with me, whatever. And I went down there, and here's my brother on the phone, and he tells me my father just died. And, of course, that floored me. And subsequently, jumping to this now, I told my family members about this, and they just look at me. But at the time, I didn't tell them. I didn't think it would be right to tell them what I had experienced. For some reason, I didn't feel, you know, I didn't want any attention on me. And it is an amazing thing. And I do not look at religion, and I do not look at reality the way I used to. And I really, really wonder what consciousness is. I'm really perplexed by that now. I think there's something else here. And I stopped going to church because I don't think it is the way that our understanding is correct. I don't think it is correct anymore. So that is an experience too. That was something. In fact, I'm supposed to speak with some people about that here soon too. They call that an SDE of a simultaneous event, a death event, they call it. Anyhow, those are the kinds of things that three or four strange events that have happened in my life.
That one was certainly interesting, especially the connection between your father and yourself. You know, it's a very rare event as well.
My mom said when her dad died, she had pains. She told me that when her dad died, she knew something was wrong because she was having pains in her chest. And subsequently, she learned that her father died at that time. So that could be hereditary too. And I don't know if that's good, bad, or ugly, but there seems to be a connection that, or a thread that runs through that too. It's really strange because, not prepared for anything like that. I don't know if I mentioned it in the article I sent you, but through the years, I have had many things happen that I can't explain, like an example, I had a dream where we had a party at my house. This is in Ohio, and everybody had a good time and everybody was leaving, but I didn't see my dad and my brother and his brother leave. And I eventually saw my dad and my mom leave in my dream, but my uncle, I don't know where he went. And then I saw the basement filling up with water. And I thought, where's this water coming from? Now, my uncle, my dad, and I and my brothers helped build my house in Ohio. We built. And so pretty good connection with him. But make a long story short, he 3 days later, he's killed in a tragic accident. And at his funeral and internment, there are all these people and they're crying. There are all these tears. And then I realized that water was these tears, that it was a premonition of his death. And that happened like 3 days before he died. And then later, years later, I have him come to me in a dream at the foot of my bed. And he tells me to contact his wife, that I need to contact his wife for him. Well, I wake up from the dream, to make it short, and I debate whether to go about doing that. And I seesaw back and forth and back and forth and back. Finally, I give in to it and I tell myself, I'm going to do this. And it's not to upset her. You know, that was my goal. I didn't want to call and just upset her. That wasn't, you know, I had to weigh this. And finally, I decide to call her and I tell her. And we discuss things for a little bit. And then she says, do you know what today's day is? And I said, no. And she said, this was his birthday. Now, I didn't remember that. I don't remember celebrating his birthday with him, you know, on his birthday. I don't remember that. So, you know, it could be just coincidence or what. I do not know.
It's a big coincidence.
Yeah. And one time my son came to my room and something was bothering him, and he came in and lay down with me. It was early in the morning, like we're looking at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. He comes over to the room, and it's just starting to get light, you know, about 5 o'clock. And I have this feeling like something passed over us. And I don't know how to explain it other than that something, I felt like something bodily passed over us. And here, this was the time when my wife's father passed away at that time. And I don't know if that's a coincidence or what also.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now. The Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
I do think, Nick, I'm a little more sensitive to things than maybe some other people, and I don't know why, but I appear to be. And I pick up on some things like this.
And it's very often the case with people in abduction experiences, certain things and sensitivities are there as well.
And any other occasion I had that was really a surprise was when I was in the Navy and I had this dream. We were leaving the Philippines and we were supposed to go back, I think, up to Vietnam again. And as we were heading, I had this dream. I went on watch and I told the guys, I said, you know, I dreamt that we received this flash priority message to proceed to North Korea, to Korea. And I said, in the dream, I dream in color, full sound, full length movies. We're talking, you know, unbelievable stuff sometimes. And I see these reds and, you know, firing and oranges and things. And I'm thinking, well, this is not good, right? In my dream. So I go up and I tell the guys on watch, I had this dream. It couldn't have been 5 minutes later. We received this flash priority message, proceed to Korea. And so our ship was sent and we were up near Vladivostok, Russia. And at that time, I worked with electronic countermeasures, and we could discern when the Russian planes flew over us, they would turn on their fire control radar, which means they were, you know, they meant business, like we shouldn't be there. And I had to pass that on to the captain, et cetera. But why? How could I pull that out of the air? You know what I mean? These are some things I can't explain, you know?
Having a background in science, Johnny,
yeah,
there's so much of this that it's of no known science to us.
I'm very critical of the fact that science has not investigated this, because there's, by now, since my days, there have been so many people who have seen something or felt something or had an event or an occurrence or whatever. And we can't just sit back. We have to be forewarned and forearmed. We have to investigate this scientifically. And it's not hogwash. It's not make-believe. Something's happening. And the sooner we earthlings begin to act like human beings and investigate this, the sooner we can maybe prevent a disaster that could happen on our planet, or prepare us for when the inevitable will come. And I think that's probably going to be sooner than later. It may not happen in my lifetime, but it may happen in my lifetime. And I think that's the other compelling reason, is it's sort of like, I want to be on that edge of saying, see, you know, I feel that we need to prepare for ourselves for inevitability, that by not being prepared, it is going to be worse for humanity than it would be if we investigated and we did prepare ourselves for this, because it's coming.
That, you know, there are people out there which know so much more than what they're letting on, especially when they're just putting out blurry military videos, you know. Mm-hmm. There is so much more they know. And of course they know. They know a lot more. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff they don't know or don't understand why these things go on, but they certainly know more than they're letting on.
I think so too. I don't delineate people who see lights in the skies, but after having the experiences I have, it's like we don't need to be destroyed before we finally pay attention. We have to move in that direction. And I do see, you know, some famous people who have come forward and who are trying to make it a science, to make it a an investigation. We have to be forewarned of people who are in this business just to make a buck or try to capitalize on other people's misfortune, or however you want to put it. But I think for the most part, anybody like yourself, Nick, who can get this information out to people, the better it will be for all of us.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree, John.
And then I appreciate giving me the opportunity to get this information out. And I hope people will heed or interpret or understand or investigate their own. And maybe this will help some people. And that's the other one other thing that I've had through the years. As after my 1982 incident, I always felt like I was going to meet someone. And I don't know who, I don't know why, but I always felt like there was people that I was supposed to meet with. And it's like a gap of some kind in the events. And I don't know if it's people who share that vehicle or times with me, or whether it's people who had their own experiences. But I often felt compelled that I would meet people who have gone through this also.
Going back to the actual vehicle itself and the people you actually remember seeing on there, other than your father, can you remember ages maybe? I know it was a long time ago, I know, with the regression and all. Could you remember the ages of the other people on board the vehicle?
They seemed to be like, well, my father at that time, what he would have been like in his 40s, 50s. You know, somewhere in there. And then they were younger, like clear into their 20s, 30s, you know, in that range. that I don't remember seeing children except in what has floated up in my mind, like being schooled and seeing this huge screen with the globe and the red marks on the globe. And there I'm with younger people for some reason. And if you were to ask me who these people were, I couldn't tell you, because it's sort of like compartmentalized. We were in our own little niche, like little cubicle, if you want to refer to it as. There were a number of us, and I can't tell you how many.
Now, the actual image of the globe, the actual dots are on the...
That was in color. That was in color, reds, and like almost like a hologram kind of appearance is the way I remember. And my view of the Earth was amazing. It would have been like I was actually in space looking at the Earth. And I didn't mention this, Nick, but I've spent many summers with NASA, and it somewhat would chuckle by our technology in comparisons to what I have been exposed to. In other words, they're so far ahead of us, mind-boggling. And when people say, they can't get here from there, I just say bullshit, because we are ignorant. We are egotistical in thinking that these people who maybe have been around for a million years can't do this. And that's way out of line.
I think you're absolutely right. The red dots that you were saying that were on the globe, they were one on South America, the Middle East. What, was there another one?
Yeah, the one in South America, and there was one in the Middle East, and then there was one in Africa. And they all were screaming out for attention, that this is like where we should concentrate to like save our planet. These are the areas that are screaming for humans to do something. That's what came across. And of course, South America, that could be the Amazon region. That's where it was at. In the Middle East, it's like where Iraq is. And Africa, it was more in the heart of Africa toward the north. So, I don't know what it meant. I don't remember everything. Like I said, I just have these visions at time, the little things that bubble up from time to time. And, and a lot of them were a long time ago. So recently I haven't had any of these things, bubble up. It was stuff that happened before. As I'm getting older, I think I am losing some of this senses that I have had.
But looking back on your experiences over the years, even though they may have been intrusive, borderline traumatic in some instances, do you think maybe they had been guiding you? They have guided you over the years?
I think they are interfering. I don't want to use the word interfering, but I feel like they have directed us in a certain direction. They just seem to be earmarking us for something. That's the, like I said, I don't know how much I've controlled my own destiny or how much they have control. And that could be little, could be a lot. I really don't know. Because I find it very difficult, because I just have this insatiable desire to learn about science. And even today, even though I'm retired, it doesn't stop. I want to know. I want to learn. And I think that maybe that's like this exploration in humanity, where some of us go forth and do things and others go along with it. I just feel like at times there were things that occurred that put me on the track to certain things. I don't brag or anything, Nick, but I was pretty good at what I did. And I think that, I could take the most difficult concept and relate it to my students. And I took pride in that and was really good at mathematics, really good at interpreting and relating and working with technology and things. And You know, I had a teacher one time, I told her, I says, you know, I don't understand, you know, why this is, you know, why are people having difficulty with this mathematics? And one little aspect we were doing, and the teacher turned to me and said, John, not everybody is like you. And that's when it hit me. Yeah, that's right. Not all of us are great mathematicians or great whatever or whatever we're going to go into. And that's the key. And that's why everybody is important, no matter what area they're in, because we depend upon each other.
That's right. It's all different cogs, isn't it? And I'm one big machine.
I had a very difficult time coming forward, Nick. This was not an easy decision. And now that I'm at the point where I don't give rats, it's easier. But what I do remember, I remember, and I know it happened. And when you have multiple instances occurs like this, and you remember some of that, then there's no way anyone could ever, you know, there's no, you know, like skeptics will say, oh, it's this and that and this. And no. Sorry. You know, and I think people have to be open-minded enough because many skeptics have had experiences too and turned their life around. So,
and there again, you know, like I tell people, you know, there's so much we don't understand, and every account is just a piece. It's just a little jigsaw piece in a, such a big puzzle.
You know, like that joggling that occurred to me, you know, going in and out of the vehicle. I can't explain that. You know, if they can take us through the roof of a house or through the wall when I was younger, maybe they can do anything they want to do. You know, it doesn't add up, you know.
I was thinking about this, you know, when you mentioned about the small, you know, the awkward opening.
Something was wrong. I'm not in a position to like analyze it based upon what was happening, you know, but something was very peculiar about that. You know, maybe it's their security. I don't know. I don't know what it was. But that's why I say, there's no locks. There's no doors. There's no place to hide. If they want to get a hold of you, they're going to get a hold of you. And that feeling where I said, oh, here they come again, that there's no stopping it. You know, there's nothing we can do. Yeah, because that's when it crucially hit me. And when I made the tie to when I was little, too, that brought all those memories rushing back. And I think once you scratch the surface, you know, with another event like that, it causes some of those things to bubble up through the conscious. And the more I thought about it, the more the possibility of something bubbling to the surface, you know.
I really appreciate you coming on today, Johnny. All your experiences were absolutely fascinating. And I'm really happy that you're actually able to share all this.
Thank you, Nick. And again, thank you for allowing me to get this out. I think I've wanted to do this for many, many years. And finally, I've been having the opportunity to do it. So thank you. And I hope people can benefit.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. That is all for this episode. Keep yourself updated and connected on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have had an encounter that you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. or via my contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. Special thanks to Johnny for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back this Thursday for a bonus episode. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.